Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Soul Surgery Podcast. I cannot wait for you to hear this next episode. This was such an honor to record. It was such a privilege to be able to have the opportunity to make this episode during this time, during what's going on in the world right now, and with all the struggles and the crisis that we are all going through. It was such medicine to sit with the woman that I sit with in this next episode, and I cannot wait to share it with you. In this episode, I am sitting with my soul sister, my best friend, my twin sister, my medicine sister, my transformation buddy, my universal flying off to different galaxies partner. And sometimes I even call her my wife, Emma Cannon. Emma is a master acupuncturist. She is an absolute master and expert in her field of healing fertility. And she has helped hundreds, thousands of women, families all over the world for the last 25 years to be able to create life in circumstances where they were told it was not possible. She has opened up doorways in order to allow life to be born. She must be the grandmother of so many babies. Emma is also a medicine woman, and she is a wise, wise teacher. And I am privileged to have her as my friend. Today's episode is something special. You know, Emma had the terrible, terrible news of learning that her breast cancer that she was in remission for had returned. And she has been on a journey of treatment and healing and awakening to try and heal this cancer that has returned into her body. And while we were all in crisis and struggling in lockdown, Emma had the devastating news to learn that this cancer had spread to her brain. And she was faced with her death. There was a point where we thought that she might only have weeks left. And she has been on this unbelievable journey. Yes, doing treatments, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, all the doctor's appointments, all the tests, yes, all of that. But beneath all of that, on a much, much deeper level, she has been dealing with it and facing it as if it is ceremony. Witnessing her navigate her way through this journey, faced with her own death, as if it is a medicine journey, as if it is a transformational process, which it is, has been unbelievable. She has so much wisdom to share. In this episode, Emma is sharing it all. Open heart, absolutely generous open heart, sharing her vulnerability, sharing her wisdom, speaking about what it really means to surrender, to let go of who we think we are, to let go of these ideas and pictures and expectations of who we are and what should have been our life, to completely surrender this physical appearance that we all attach ourselves so much to, thinking it is us. You know, she's lost her hair. She lost sight in one eye. She's had to physically surrender over and over and over again. And so without further ado, I hope that you find this episode powerful and useful, and that you can hear the wisdom that is being shared here. If you love it, if you find it useful and healing, share about it with your friends. Please leave a review. Reviews matter. Reviews help us make sure that this work gets spread to as many people far and wide, and this podcast gets spread far and wide. Please do subscribe. And if you have any big insights or aha moments, get in touch with me and let me know, where in the episode did it happen for you and how has it impacted you? I always love hearing from you, and I love hearing about your healing. So I have talked enough. Now I want to hand it over to the medicine woman, to the wisdom that is Emma Cannon. So I am so excited for you all to hear this episode. I'm sitting here with my absolute best friend, soul sister, twin soul, transformation flight buddy, the amazing Emma Cannon. Hi, Emma. How are you doing?
I'm good. There's not many people that could have dragged me out of my hiding. My bliss hiding.
You know, we're laughing, but that really, I really just want to say thank you. And it's such an honor to be able to have this conversation with you. You know, it's not a small thing to get up and come here and be on camera and speak to us about, you know, your journey and share your heart with us and with me. So I feel really honored.
There are not many people that could have done it. But as soon as you said yes, I was like, if anyone can make me speak or help me speak and tell it, it's you. And yes. And you know, and actually, I think that sometimes when you're in these episodes in your life where everything is very challenging, the sort of temptation is that you think you've got to get somewhere. And you know, you fall into that, like, oh, I'm trying to get to this place, but then you realize that that doesn't exist. So actually it's more like a dipping in and out. Although when I was very much in the deep heart of the process, there was no dipping in and out. I was just very much in it. So I felt myself coming back to myself a lot more recently, which is amazing.
Yes, you know, I'm going to start off with that. Actually, you know, it felt like, it was like when the whole world went into crisis and we all went into lockdown, 6 billion people went into lockdown, you were going through your own personal and very, very deep journey and crisis. You still are. And it's been quite a remarkable thing to be walking alongside you while we are all collectively going through these huge changes and invitations of change, continuous, constant change and letting go. And it's just felt like you have been living it at the deepest level in yourself. So can you just share with us, let's start with just sharing with us, you know, what journey you've been on, because the listeners here may not know you, may not have never heard you before. So just share a little bit about, you know, what's this journey that you've been on this year?
Yeah. So I had a return of cancer in 2017, which I'd been living with and having treatment and working. And October last year, I really just got an intuition that I really needed to change things. Now, I'm really lucky that I've worked my purpose for the last 25, 27 years. Absolutely love what I do. You know, well, we call it wellness now, I guess, or, you know, or healing. But well, I didn't even have a name when I started. So I've just sort of grown up with this whole movement. Which of course started in the 60s, really, I guess, with sort of whole spiritualism and wellness and healing. So So I've been really lucky, and it's really difficult to change that because I was on paper very successful. I earned good money from it. Everyone benefited, seemingly, you know, the clients, the people that worked for me. I had a really good relationship with Western medicine practitioners. But I knew October 2019, I got a really, just something happened, and I call them signs, spiritual signs. And I knew, and I literally had a conversation with myself, with all spirit. And I said, okay, spirit, I know what you're saying. I know there's more for me. And I know that things have to fall away first. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do that. Help me do that. Kind of put it to one side, got on with life.
Hoped it would go away.
And then, hey presto, bang, COVID happened. Well, actually what happened before that is my treatment stopped working and I got put on a trial drug. And anyway, just before we went into lockdown, I had a consultation with my homeopath, and she said to me, you're homesick. And I'd just come back from Vietnam, and I had been homesick because I wasn't very well in Vietnam. I actually was in a wheelchair because the trial drug was so intense. At the airport, I had to be in a wheelchair because I couldn't really walk. And my body had started to really go into lockdown. And she said to me, you're homesick. And I'm sure you've had those moments where every cell in my body,
yes,
just felt seen or understood, yes, or just like, that's what this is. That's yes, well, that's my sadness.
Yes.
And so my lockdown, then we went into lockdown, and my lockdown experience became about that. And you know a lot, you know how many layers homesickness has, because you had a course called Homecoming.
Yes.
So it has, yes, that level, coming home to yourself.
Yes.
It had the physical level that I built this beautiful home, but I was never in it because I was always in my clinic in Chelsea serving other people. Yes. It was that feeling of never belonging, or not knowing where I belonged. It was that feeling that had of the child that had been put in boarding school, and mm-hmm, and the trauma around that. Nikki, it was just so layered. Yes. I collapsed in a heap, basically. I collapsed in a heap, and I went inwards.
Yes. You know, when you said the word homesick, it just hit me on such a deep level. Yes, I have a program called Homecoming, but what I heard in what you said was like the big home. Like when I hear homesick, and I say this often with my the women that I work with, you know, we think that when we're going mad or when we're falling apart, there's something wrong with us, but what we're really longing for is we want to return home. We're longing to return home, and that home is, that home is the truth of who we really are. And that, and with that is so many layers, right? There's the authenticity of who we are, but then there's the source, the wholeness of who we are. And
yeah.
Oh, so beautiful. You know, I witnessed you living and breathing and practicing surrender at the absolute deepest level. I talk about it. I've lived it myself. My book is called Surrender, mostly because of you. But everything about how you've been dealing and facing and navigating this journey has been about the deep, deep surrender, the surrender home.
Yeah.
And, you know, share with us a bit more about letting go. Like what have you letting go of, and what have you learned from it? What are you learning from
okay.
it?
Okay. Well, so to begin with, you know, that like I really grieved a lot in the beginning of lockdown. So I cried every day. I think first of all, it was because I knew that I was going to have to let go of the clinic. And so that was the easiest thing to grieve about because it was a very physical thing. And I knew that it had to get done.
Bring some context to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 25 years. 25 years of work and vision and how you've identified yourself. Yeah. So let's just honor that. That's a big deal. Closing down the clinic, 25 years you've spent there.
I know. Well, not in that actual, not that place, but 25 years building my practice and coming to a place, I mean, and also that place, I built a mood board and I put that, it was lovely. You walk through a little archway just off the King's Road. And I built a little mood board and I had that image on it 10 years before I actually got it. So to actually have ended up there was just amazing. And yeah, so it was really hard, but I knew immediately there wasn't any doubt. There was no rumination. I knew that this was the sign. COVID was the sign, you know, to try and keep that place going in London, in this climate, with me in my situation. No, that was not going to be an option. So I knew immediately. And I guess that's the knowing is half the battle, isn't it? It's the knowing with every bone in your body, or every cell in your body, that's what needs to happen. But it doesn't mean it wasn't without grief. So I really did grieve it. And I think that's really important. And so that happened. And then what was really interesting is I couldn't actually pack it up myself in the end. I physically couldn't do it. So that was the first step in me allowing other people to help me and to do things for me, because historically I've just done everything myself. And, you know, I'm like a, you know, powerhouse, you know, I was a powerhouse. So I physically allowed other people to do it. And it was interesting because that kind of came out. I was doing this trauma work with Gabor Mate, the training. Compassionate inquiry, and just like, actually I don't have to do that. I can, that's part of the letting go, is to let someone else do it. And I did go back once, I went back to it once, and it had gone, like all the magic had gone, because without the people and without me there and without me doing my work and my weaving and my, you know, making it all happen, there was nothing there anymore. So that was the first thing I let go of. Yeah.
And then after that, so, you know, now you're speaking about not even realizing that you're not even the physical energy that you've known yourself to be. You know, you're not only a powerhouse, Emma, like you've been a direct contributor to bringing life into this world for a, you know, for a quarter of a century. Like how many babies are you a grandmother to? You've used so much energy. You've been a healer. You've been the one that has been healing. So to then be in that place where you can't even get up and pack the boxes.
I know.
That's a surrender.
That was a huge surrender on a physical level. And then there was the other thing that was created there was the building the bridges with Western medicine. Because for me, of course, it was always about creating life, but it was more than that. It was about bringing life to medicine, you know, making medicine into something more than just our pathology. And just our blood tests, you know, and obviously this is something that I've been challenged on to the degree personally, but for people who don't know me, a lot of my work was, okay, what you say, doctor, you know, about making babies is very different to how I see it and what I say. But let's work together. Let's find the common ground, because actually we both have the same aim. We're just going about it in different ways. So I spent many, many years trying to bridge that gap. And that was a huge grief for me as well, sort of having to begin to let go of that. But what I realized in that was that for me, there has been a compromise in that, because I'm always the Trojan horse. You know, I'm always the one that has to go in, not have my shoulders out, not have my, you know, my heart so open, you know, make myself understood by speaking to them in their language. And I was really good at it, but it was a compromise to my authenticity and my heart in a way. You know, I don't think I ever was inauthentic, but I had to mold and model myself to their way, to be accepted by them. I'm too old to do that now. I'm not interested to do that now. So although there was a lot of grief around that, when I came through it, I was like, no, that's what your soul's asking for. Mm-hmm. You're bored of doing that now. Mm-hmm. You just want to say, no, this isn't what I think, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've earned that right, both through being a patient and through many, many years.
Yes.
So that was another grief, but there was beauty in that too.
And so, you know, let's look at the next stage of surrender. I want to go as deep as we can go here. Why do I want to go as deep as we can go? Because I got to say, it's a rarity to be able to speak to someone who is really facing this depth of letting go, and also facing, you know, the possibility of death. We have to say the word. We don't know when. But I think we all live in a way that doesn't exist. Like it's not meant to be part of the conversation. But you are facing it. It's right there, and it's a rarity to be able to have a conversation with someone who is so consciously in relationship with this journey with it. And so, you know, there's so much wisdom that you are teaching me, and that you can teach so many just from the way that you are journeying this. I mean, it's been like you've been dealing with this like you're in a ceremony. That's
100%. I mean, many times, my love, I didn't even know whether I was here or not during lockdown, because the energy was so unusual anyway. I mean, there were birds singing all the time. I mean, I used to lie for hours on end in my summer house. I have that lovely cushioned place, and there's water, and the birds. I'd never heard bird songs so loud in this country. I felt really like I was somewhere else. I mean, luckily for me, it's because I went so inward, I didn't deal with a lot of the noise. So I didn't really go into the fear. And I probably drove everyone mad, because I just kept facing everything with love. You know, I was just like, because I really felt like I was I was held in a divine place of love. I have no other way of describing it than that.
Yes.
And it was kind of blissful, actually. So I don't think that if I was dead at times, which maybe I was, or if you do float between in and out, I got to tell you, it's not bad. Whatever's coming, it doesn't feel like a bad thing. And I still feel like I'm with both, actually. Mm-hmm. So what happened was that physically things started to go wrong. So obviously I'd had the incident in the wheelchair, and mm-hmm. I wasn't ready for that. I mean, that was luckily, it was just a sort of flare up. It was one of the medications that they gave me as a trial drug, and it just flared up everything, I think. And so my husband, who's used to me being totally independent, had to push me in a wheelchair, which was, first of all, that actually he didn't push me, an assistant pushed me, thank God, because I wasn't ready for my lovely husband to push me in a wheelchair. And then I think I said to you, God, I don't know about this Skype business. You know, my eyes are really going. And actually talking to you now, I can see, I really, really, I can't see properly. So I'm having to sort of, so my eyesight started to go. And so I could no longer drive. And I could no longer really do Skype. I mean, I probably could, but I physically couldn't do those things that normally would be the things that I would keep going. Mm-hmm. But what the result of that is I had to let myself be taken care of.
Yes.
And I think I had a belief system going back to, you know, it's probably going back to childhood, all these things do, you know, that I was the one that had to take care of everyone else, you know. Yes. Lots of us have it, especially us healers. Or I have to be really sick to receive help for myself. And so much of this journey has been about learning to receive, because if it wasn't for the eyesight going, I'd be driving myself to hospital to have chemotherapy. I'd probably still be doing Skype consultations, and I would still be doing those things that were part of the old energy that I'm supposed to be letting go of. Mm-hmm. So that's where the surrender is, isn't it? You know, it's giving into that gracefully, and that's not weakness. And I think that's what people don't really understand about surrender, isn't it?
Yes.
It's actually the hardest thing.
Yes. It surrender is not a weakness. It takes tremendous courage to surrender, because what you're really saying and what I completely identify with is that all those survival strategies that we put in place to protect us from that pain that we believe that we can't receive, or we're not worthy of receiving, or we always have to give, all those survival strategies is allowing them to dissolve, letting them go. And with that comes such a vulnerability and such a trust. And what I hear it's very moving, and no one would ever imagine that through such a traumatically challenging experience as what you're going through, there's such healing there. For you to come to the core point of wound there for you, and allow yourself to be healed, to be received, to receive and loved and helped and held, and you get to just let go. That is a coming home.
Darling, I have 150 stories of receiving that I can tell you. I have received in so many ways, so many ways. Even last night, I'll tell you this story because I was so moved. I had this beautiful rug and it got eaten by the moth. And there was a huge hole. It was like this big in it. And I don't know, somehow in the midst of my madness or in my, you know, I suddenly had a practical moment where I wanted to fix the rug. And I was thinking, you crazy, why are you spending money on fixing this rug, you know? And I was like, well, it's a really lovely rug and it deserves to keep, it's almost like it was part of me, you know, it's an old rug and I love old things and I like restoring old things and I like giving them life, you know? Mm-hmm. So somehow in the midst of it, I wanted to repair this broken thing. Anyway, I phoned up this rug company that I'd used before, and he said, yeah, sure, no problem. We can get that done for you. It'll be £1,000 and it won't be back till Christmas. And I started laughing. And he said, what? So why are you laughing? And I said, I'm not laughing about the price, because I 100% believe in paying for things, you know, and handicrafts and people's time, and I'm sure it's worth it. It's not about, I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at myself because I'm going to have to give you my husband's number because I'm not even sure I'm going to be here, just in case you can't get hold of me. What do you mean you're not going to be here? And I said, I'm not, well, I don't, not being dramatic, but I literally might not be here. This was back in June or something. Anyway, he said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. And are you unwell? And I said, yeah, I've been, I'm having chemo, but honestly, don't worry. I'll have it, probably have it clean so that it doesn't get eaten anymore. Anyway, long story short, he cleaned it and mended it. He sent it back to me yesterday. He did not charge me a penny. Oh. And we just had this exchange and I just said, I can't, I'm almost going to cry now. I said, you know, my whole journey has been about receiving and I can't believe that that you've done this for nothing for me. And I wasn't dramatic or laid, I was just really pragmatic and just sort of quite funny about it. And we just had this beautiful conversation yesterday. And I just was so touched because I was just like, you know, when we make ourselves vulnerable and when we are really authentic and true and come from that place, it is a more beautiful world because you invite people in, you know, you invite people in to care for you. And Nikki, it's just like, that is everything. I knew at some point it was the rug man that tipped me. But it was just so beautiful. And we both knew, you know, he said to me, he just said something about, I can tell you're a really independent person and this must be a really big deal for you to have people care for you and to receive. And I said, yeah, that's exactly it.
Yes.
It was just so, it was everything. It was everything.
That is everything. You know, that to be able to share your humanity with someone and, but you see, that was a gift for you. That was a risk for you, but it was a gift for him too. Because we live in a world where we have become, we've become used to disconnection. We've become used to putting masks on. We've become used to putting all these presentations on, and we're all just longing for the same thing, is this connection, to be seen, to be heard, and to connect. And you know, it's a sweet, funny story, but in it is just absolute human intimacy.
Yeah. But I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned, is that by being really independent and not allowing people to serve us and be there for us, it's sort of selfish in a way, actually. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing it in fertility patients when help was on offer for them. I used to say to them, you know, help is often on, and of course is what I needed to learn myself. Help is often there. It's just about us receiving it, because they would get very hurt when, you know, and it's really hurtful if you have a miscarriage and people say the wrong thing, you know, if they say, and then people say it to me too. Oh, I just know you're going to be fine. You're such a strong person. Well, A, I don't think strength is what gets you through cancer anyway. and I just know I'm going to be fine. You know, people say those things, but they don't mean any harm. But I think that we can still be, well, A, we can surrender in those situations, but we can also be the teacher. So you can also show people how you need to be helped. So if they don't say the right thing, you know, you can say, what would really help me is if you brought me some soup rounds, you know. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I know you mean well, but what would really help me is if you bought me a bowl of soup, you know.
Yes.
So you show people how you need to be helped. Yes. And that's what takes courage.
Yes. I've actually, in our friendship, that's something that I've really been able to learn. You know, I don't even know how we ended up being friends, but meeting you has been such a healing experience for me, because it's kind of the first time I feel like I've really been met. And there've been so many times when I've when I've been able to learn how to show all of myself with you, not just the strong one that, you know, leads things, but the one, all layers. And it's, you know, it teaches me over and over again, it's safe. It's safe to show. It's safe to ask for love. It's safe to be human. It's safe to be to not be strong, and you know, it's teaching me how to be different with my husband. The other night I was freaking out about money. We got an alert on our phone that we'd gone overdrawn, and I was panicking on the sofa, and he normally really struggles when I'm panicking. That's when he gets really protected in himself. Mm-hmm. And I just said over to him, I said, I know you find this really hard, but this would be a really good time to come and sit on the sofa and reassure me right now.
Wow. Good.
And he just came and he sat with me. And I said, you know, this would be a good time for you to say to me, it's all going to be okay, honey, I'm with you. And then he said it. And my heart was just like, ah.
that's really powerful. And I know how hard that is to say that.
Yeah, it's taken me like 41 years to learn how to say that.
It's really hard. It is. Yeah, so the surrender and the learning to receive have been the big things for me. And also I think the not having to tie everything up in tidy boxes, you know. Because it's like when I thought about talking to you, I was like, I don't want to be in that place where it's like I've been through a terrible hardship and now it's all tied up in a neat little box, you know. You know, I'm coming from a place of allowing myself to be nothing, you know, and the bravery to do that. I don't mean I'm literally nothing, but it's just that idea of, you know, I don't have all these titles that I'm living up to at the moment. And, you know, even my children are caring for me, you know, during lockdown. And I know how hard all you parents work during lockdown with their children, but my children served me during lockdown.
Yes. You know, when you talk about nothing, I think, you know, so much of what we get taught about what nothing is a hole where something is missing. But actually, you know, Zen masters speak about nothingness as the spaciousness beyond all the noise. That actually we are all, we're everything and we're nothing. Yeah. And I believe that's the nothing you're speaking of, not where a hole is missing or where something is missing, but surrendering to nothingness.
Yeah. To not knowing what's coming. Like that was the thing. It's like, oh, should I speak to Nikki now? Because I've got nothing to, I haven't got this thing to offer. Like, this is the solution to this. The solution is just let go. and to accept wherever you are. And what I guess one of the most powerful things that I've realized is that, and I wanted to say it to my consultant on the phone, but I do say stuff to them that kind of mostly goes over the head, but sometimes little bits go in. And it's really about where we get medicine from. You know, what is medicine? And I've always done all the medicine that I've been told to do from a Western medicine point of view, not in its entirety, with negotiation always and allowing myself to be powerful always and having the last word always. I mean, that again has been really difficult, you know, and I know that I'm a difficult patient. I mean, they must just go, oh, no, not her again. Although I do come in white and just like beam love at them all. So that's how I meet all those fearful medical situations, because they are really fearful for me. And that's, I'm hospital phobic. So I usually dress in white and I beam love in the face of fear. And And when I did my, when I did the radiotherapy, so I had to do 15 sessions of radiotherapy, and I had to have a mask fitted over my face. And if you go to my Instagram, I think there's a picture of it there. And first of all, when they make the mask, they sort of put this plasticine over your face. And that feels like you're suffocating. And anyway, I decided that I was going to turn it into to my high priestess mission. So I wasn't going to have radiotherapy at all. I was getting special new codes for humanity downloaded onto my brain. And I even said to them on the first meeting when I met the radiotherapy team, I said, is this your first high priestess mission? And so, and every time after I'd had a radiotherapy, I would get a download. I'd get some kind of download, and I would tell them the download. So I would say, you know, you're more incredible than you would ever imagine, or you're more beautiful than you would ever imagine. And they would just wait every day for this download from me. So I did that every day for 15 days. But what I realized is that everything can be medicine. So even when I did chemotherapy, I'd done it 15 years before and I had to have it again recently. And as soon, and I went into that again with love, just from an absolute place of love. And as the chemotherapy entered my body in a port here, I have no other way of describing this, but it's almost like I became one with the medicine. So it was like I just got blown into this place in the cosmos where it was all what we were all one. So I was one with the medicine. It wasn't a toxic, harmful substance that was trying to hurt me. It was love, basically. Mm. And I think in that way, we can turn everything into medicine, because I was terrified of chemotherapy, absolutely terrified. I'm probably more terrified of chemotherapy than I was of cancer. And you can do that. I can do that when I go into the sea. I call in the medicine into my body. So I call in the energy from the earth and the sea and the oceans and the chi of that, and I call that into my body to get it to remove anything out of my body that shouldn't be there and to heal everything for the highest good. Mm. So that's kind of how I did it.
Absolutely beautiful, and just the most perfect and powerful way to finish this episode, that to remind and teach everyone that's listening that we can turn anything into medicine. It is actually the relationship that we have with it, what we're going to bring with it, what can we turn it, make something out of it. And everything is medicine. And actually, that is the book that I know you're writing. You are the medicine. And I think that might be the title of this episode, actually. Emma Cannon, I love you. I love you so much. High Priestess, thank you so much for your courage and your heart and your teachings and your wisdom. It's just an honor to know you and be friends with you. And thank you for sharing yourself on this episode with everyone that's listening.
Oh, thank you. Your love and friendship is medicine, my love.
Thank you.
And your work, medicine for the world.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So that's the end of this Soul Surgery podcast episode. We're now going to head over to the Awakening Collective, which is my private membership community, where we share private content on there, just a few questions for the women in that community. If you want to know anything more about the Awakening Collective, you can read the details in the introductory notes. So thank you so much, and head over to the AC we go.